Welcome to our Created to Work podcast for Modern Day Daniels out of Calvary Memorial Church in Oak Park. This podcast is for our Daniel Dinner group at Calvary, which is made up of guys working in secular jobs who, just like the prophet Daniel, serve a God who works. We'll host guests from around the country who have thought about the topic of incorporating their faith into their work and who are themselves modern-day Daniels, impacting their communities. This is an experiment to see what we can learn and how we can grow as a community.
So I think there's a lot of ways you can come at this and recognize that if this isn't deeply from the Spirit of God, and you think of it as a strategy to become successful, I think you'll lose heart at various places.
And finally get to meet you, Al. So
that's great.
So essentially we'll start off just kind of, you know, going over some of the questions. I think, you know, obviously you've done a ton of work in this area of faith and work and tying them together, and not only in your own life working it, but also, you know, actually teaching others to do it as well and creating resources for people to do it. So the first question I had was, you know, how, and I'll be typing over here, so it's, you know, I'm okay. Taking notes. It's not like I'm looking away.
That's fine.
So how would you say being a person of faith, or how would you say your faith would make you maybe more successful in your workplace itself?
So I think that begs the question of how you define success. So if you say, if your question really means, if I really bring my faith to my work, will that make me wealthier? Will that give me a promotion? I would say, you know, the Proverbs has a lot to say about diligence in our work, working faithfully, working honestly, and God rewarding that. So I think often it does, but I think sometimes it also costs you something. Mm. And so the idea of saying, if I do this, it will make me successful, is a bit of a trap. Mm. And it actually causes people to think about the question the wrong way, because they'll say, maybe their motives won't be pure. I'm doing this so that I can get wealthy. Well, God doesn't guarantee that. We're in a broken world. Or you might ask, actually say, because I didn't get that raise, because my business is not doing well, then it must be my faith isn't good. And I think both of those are wrong. Mm. So one of my favorite interviews, you observe that I've done quite a few. There's 110 interviews out on ethics.org, ethix.org. Mm-hmm. One of the guys that I interviewed was a fellow named Don Flo, and I did two interviews with him. One of them, it was in 2000.
That's Flo Automotive, right? Was that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So one of the interviews was in 2005. And he outlined these incredible practices they had. And they really were unlike almost any practice I'd ever heard of. And it was all rooted deeply in his faith. And I said to him, you know, if you do things like this, can you make any money? And he said, well, we actually make quite a lot of money because people trust us. They come from all around to buy a car. They know that our word is our bond. We're reliable. So all that works well. Have a good dinner. And so that's on the one side. I called him again in January 2009. That was at the time of the economic crisis.
Okay.
And I said, how's your business now? And he said, well, sales are down 70%. Of our 32 dealerships, 15 of them are General Motors, and they're in bankruptcy. And even usually when sales are down, service is up. But now service is down as well because no one is spending any money. He said, I don't know if we're going to make it. Mm. And I said, well, what have you done? And he said, we got the management team together and we said, we are committed to the values that we hold. Everything else is on the table for discussion, but we're not going to change our values. Mm. And it was incredibly hard work. I've talked with him since, and they're doing well again, but it was a very, very painful time. And, you know, if you thought, well, if I do this, it'll make me successful, mm. all of a sudden you get halfway through one of these things and you say, well, it isn't working, and you abandon the principles. I think God is faithful in the long term, and sometimes it's only in eternity. But mm. He calls us to be faithful, and we do this work in a way that honors him. And I think often it does well, but it's not a strategy for being successful. Yeah, so no. I think it has to be deeply rooted. And I've got some other stories. A guy who runs a cabinet company, an incredibly well-run company, and in 2008, 2009, same problem. Mm. They didn't know if they'd make it. Mm. Another guy that I interviewed was Bob Wright, and he was with Arthur Andersen right after Enron went down and Andersen was on its way down.
Okay.
And the stance he took to preserve the jobs of a number of people at Andersen was incredible. And ultimately, the company failed. Hmm. And he has gone on to a successful career. But the choices that he made during that time were out of faithfulness and not with the goal of success. Hmm. So I think there's a lot of ways you can come at this and recognize that if this isn't deeply from the Spirit of God, and you think of it as a strategy to become successful, I think you'll lose heart at various places. And so I don't think it can be used in that way.
There's no shortcut.
No shortcut.
No, and that's kind of why I asked the question is, you know, I mean, selfishly, I'm using this because I feel like I'm at a position where, okay, I've had pretty good sort of sales career, but now it's like, hey, where do I go next? Do you go into management? But how do you know that it's fully for God? And what does that look like? So I feel like I'm just gaining so much wisdom just kind of asking this question. So it kind of leads me into kind of what you were talking about with the Joseph story, because I think, you know, like you said, you know, faith costs you something. And I think that's a difficult truth that is very easy to forget the further you go along in business, the further that you do things. I feel like that's a really strong thing. So, you know, with the Joseph story, one element that you pulled out that I thought was very interesting was the fact that, you know, he was a slave. And there was that period of slavery where he was, you know, doing the work that was horrible, and you know that was you know, just very difficult period before he got to have the dream job of the right hand man of Pharaoh that we all want, which is like me. I want that right hand job of Pharaoh, but you know, what about that period of slavery? So I don't know if you could speak to you speak a lot to it in the book, but you know, about facing, you know, that slavery period that Joseph had and the element of costing something with your faith.
Right. I think I've become convinced that Joseph could not have done the job he did later without the time in slavery, because I think it shaped his character. And I've identified seven reasons why I think it's important to connect our faith. One of them is evangelism. One of them is resources. One of them is ethics. But one of them is the work itself shapes our character. I think there's another one too that says God cares about the work. And I think gaining that perspective is revolutionary, because if we only think of the work as a means to an end, then I think we can kind of do any work and say that's okay. But I think if we recognize that if I'm involved in making computers, that God cares about computers. And computers are something that God has given us to be a part of creating, and airplanes that I was involved in. I think these are important things. So I think all of these, but that point about our work is part of what God uses to shape our character is what I saw so clearly in Joseph. If you look at him in the 37th chapter, when he was talking to his brothers about his dream, it was really all about him. And what stunned me so much in studying the 41st chapter, when he's called before Pharaoh, is this is a completely different guy. He doesn't say anything about his own plight. I like to talk to my students about this one. He shaved and changed his clothes before he stood before Pharaoh. He acknowledged that God was his source, that he couldn't do this. And he went way beyond what might be expected of him in answering the question, because he had the confidence in God. So it moved from being about him to being about serving the one he was meeting with. And I think that is what happened, the refining that went on in the process of his time. And I can think about difficult times. In fact, I opened the book with the story of what had happened with me when I was demoted. And it was a very, very difficult period. And yet, I felt like it changed me. And it was I would never want to do it again. But I am thankful for what it did in my life. So I think Joseph helps us see both sides of this question of in difficult circumstances. And it actually ties back to the first, the idea that it's not about success, it's about faithfulness. But when we're faithful, God can bless us, and he does. But sometimes it's just hard. And during that period, he shapes us. And all of those are a part of this complex picture.
No, I love that. It's not about success. It's about faithfulness. I think that's, I mean, such a great message, like faithfulness. What do you feel like, I mean, faithfulness to the work or faithfulness to God, or I guess both?
Both. And I think that does raise the important question that you hinted at there of when should I make a choice to go and when should I make a choice to stay? I gave a talk recently to a group of people. Can you be a Christian and be ambitious? And the conclusion I came to is it centers on two sub-questions. One of them is ambitious for who and ambitious for what. And if it's all about me, I've got to be careful there. But if it's all about serving others, that's a good thing. If it's all about leading a business so that you could actually navigate some of these things in a way with your leadership that would be honoring to God, that's great. And then I pointed out to the people I was talking with that there's this really fine line between these where I start off with a purpose for God, and in about a millisecond, it can switch over to being about me. And how do I navigate that? And that's where I think time in the Word of God and having some people like you do around you, and you can say, here's what I'm thinking about. These are what I think my motives are, but do you see something else in me? I think these are really helpful. So it isn't just... So I believe that, yes, you can be ambitious. Yes, you take that next step. Because sometimes God calls you to do that. But sometimes it can become about you. And then it can twist. And the wonderful thing about God is that he can take things done for wrong motives and make good out of it. And, you know, the grace of God is just amazing. And so we recognize that even when we mess up, God can redeem something from that. And we do. We're not perfect. and we're thankful for that. But I think we should seek to have this about his glory, but maybe, as Mordecai said to Esther, maybe this is why God has put you in this position. You are there for such a time as this, and your role in leadership, Joseph's role in leadership, Daniel's role in leadership. I mean, the scripture is filled with people who did some amazing things, and God called them to those that work. So we shouldn't be afraid of it, but we want to be careful about it being about us. And so I don't know if that's helpful, but that's the way I think of it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it makes me think, I mean, just how, like, the community aspect is so important of
absolutely
being involved, and not just because you're right, the motives, it's so easy to question. I feel like as Christians, we question our motives so much, which we should.
Right.
But
right.
There's almost an element of, well, is this right? And, like, especially, you know, in our group, for sure, there's definitely guys saying, well, I don't know if this motive is right. And then we almost become paralyzed.
Right.
Where sometimes, like you said, God can use some of our negative motives even for good. So I guess, that's something I'm thinking about. Like, how do I move forward even in the midst of my imperfection, sort of trusting God?
Right. And I really believe that... you know, I've been reading in 1 and 2 Samuel recently about the life of David. And David is called a man after God's own heart. And he did some amazing things, and he did some horrible things that God brought him out of. And it's a reminder to us that God really looks at our heart. And I don't think we should be paralyzed at all. I remember years ago sitting on an airplane and reading Chuck Colson's book, Born Again. And in that book, he makes this comment that after he became a believer, he said to God, "You can do anything you want with my life." And I said to myself, I don't think I've ever prayed that. And I closed my eyes and I prayed that right there on the airplane. And as soon as I did, I ducked. I said, okay, now God's sending me to Africa. And what I came to realize is that that's not who God is. Mm. He's given us gifts and abilities to do things and given us a purpose and meaning. And I don't think we have to be afraid of this. And I think when we duck back and we don't want to use our abilities, we're like the steward who was given a talent and he buried it in the ground because God was a tough taskmaster. No, he wants us to go out and do things and to develop his world, to lead people in ways that bring blessing to our cities. Jeremiah 29 is really good on that. And being in the marketplace is part of that. So I don't think we should be ducking it, but I think we have to be careful of our motives as well. And so that's why time in the Word of God and time with some friends to challenge, encourage, push, it's all of that. And community is really important.
Yeah. One thing I really like in the book, and just kind of you know, the interviews that you do, I feel like, you know, definitely for the guys that see that, can find the ethics interviews, they're still online. I mean, you have hundreds of extremely successful, you know, business people that, and you know, in all kinds of industries, which I'm sure is very difficult to get those people to come on, and it was some great information. But it seemed like there was a lot of humility as a theme, you know,
yeah.
In terms of humility accompanied with success, so that you're keeping a healthy view of God through everything. How do you feel like having a healthy, a humble mindset sort of helps you in the workplace, or, you know, is, you know, because I guess it's counterintuitive, because you think, especially me in sales and business, it's, you know,
right.
You can't be humble. So I don't know if you could speak to that piece of it.
So I have a good friend, David Gill, who has been working in this space also for a long time. And one of the things that he showed me is some work he'd done with the Beatitudes. And the first Beatitude is, blessed are the poor in spirit. And what he said was, being poor in spirit means that I'm not full of myself, so I can take something in. And we can translate that in conversation to leading with humility. And I had given talks on this to secular audiences. In fact, all eight principles, you would find those under Ethics Tools, Eight Traits of a Healthy Organizational Culture. And if you look at them carefully and read the Beatitudes, you'll see they're one for one, an application of that.
And that's on ethics.org.
Ethics.org under Ethics Tools. I think there's something called Eight Traits of a Healthy Organizational Culture. And so it actually comes directly from the Beatitudes. Blessed are those who mourn is being accountable for what you do. Blessed are the meek, that's power under control. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, that's a passion for excellence. Blessed are the merciful, that's forgiveness on the back end and working with others. And there's these things that play against each other. There's integrity, there's collaboration and courage. It's the way we end it. I've given this talk in many places in the world, and I was at IKEA in Ireland one time, not a Christian environment at all. And so I just went through these traits of a healthy organizational culture. We had a wonderful, robust discussion. But I said, you know, I've never seen a company with humility in the value statement. And they said, it's in ours. And they showed me that it was number one on theirs. They gave me some stories as to how they worked it out. And it's been a fundamental part of creating this culture in the company. And then Jim Collins' book came out.
How does that, on the IKEA, how did that play out for them? I mean, like...
So here was one of the examples they gave me. The founder of IKEA is a very, very wealthy man. He's a billionaire.
Yeah. The idea of IKEA is genius because basically they took the labor out of it.
Right.
I mean, it's so genius.
Right. So he would come to the headquarters in Ireland there. But they have a company policy that when people do company travel, they stay in 3-star hotels. So IK are his initials. I forget his name. So when he came there to Dublin, he stayed in a 3-star hotel as a billionaire.
Wow.
And he said people noticed. And it was transforming in the way he approached this. Another guy who is really good at this and has talked about these things is Bill Pollard, who lives in your area. He lives in Wheaton. He was the CEO and chairman of ServiceMaster for many years. I've got an interview with him as well. And he was actually out here last week. I was a host of for some meetings that he was holding. But he wrote a book called The Soul of the Firm. And it's an amazing book. And an example in that book of how they worked it out is ServiceMaster did really dirty jobs. So every executive would spend a day a year mopping floors, cleaning toilets, and doing those ordinary jobs. And he told me the story about cleaning the floor at a hospital. And this woman came up to him and he says, "Are you Bill Pollard?" And he said, "Well, yes, I am." And she said, "Didn't you used to be a lawyer?" And he says, "Yes, but I have a new job now."
And he was cleaning up.
Cleaning the floors. And, you know, interestingly, after I had been talking about these things and talking to Bill Pollard and so on, Jim Collins came out with the book Good to Great. And he asked, what were the characteristics of leaders who developed greatness in their companies over a sustained period? Mm-hmm. The number one was humble, strong leadership.
Yeah.
And seeing that kind of jumped off the page at me, because here's confirmation about something that was in the scripture that I'd been talking about, and there it is.
Yeah, no, and he juxtaposed it against the very charismatic,
Right.
sort of leaders, and yeah, and I think that speaks to the team aspect of it. So, in terms of, I feel like one thing about your career that stands out to me is just the longevity of it. I mean, it was just years of work, and I think, a lot of top themes that come up with our group is, provider fatigue, things of, am I ready to leave my job? I dislike my boss. Things that sort of come up, in terms of the just longevity of a life as you work, I guess life in general.
Yeah.
But especially in the workplace, and I think, Joseph is a great example just how he was such a long term, and you go through his life, from the beginning all the way down to the end. So it's just, so I guess you could just speak to like kind of the faith and how that interferes with the, or not interferes, but helps in terms of the longevity
Right.
of what you're doing.
So, I think the key to that one is in the 50th chapter where his brothers came to him and were afraid after their father died that he would get revenge. And he said, well, you intended it for evil, but God intended it for good, for the saving of many people. He had a purpose in the work he did that he felt came from God. And as a result, it wasn't just him working for provision. It wasn't just him hanging in there in the difficult times, but he saw his work as a call from God. And even in the third chapter of Colossians, when Paul is talking to slaves, he says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. And I think when we take a step of seeing purpose in our work, that the purpose that goes beyond the money and the tasks that have to be done, see a real purpose, it changes us, it affects us. Bill Pollard told a story about a service master taking over the janitorial services in the hospitals in England when they bought out another company. And they went in and trained these people and provided them the tools, but they talked to them about the purpose of their work. And one of the things was, a janitor isn't cleaning the floor. She is helping the patient get well. And here's the link between the task and the purpose. And Bill told me about the time when he was over there visiting, and after he had given a talk, she came up and threw her arms around him and she said, my work has purpose. I am helping the patient get well. I love working here. That changes. And Bill and I have talked about this. And I said to him, you know, you don't always have a boss who will do that for you, who will provide that insight. And then I think it's up to the individual person to say, all right, Paul said, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. Maybe that purpose comes from God. Maybe my boss doesn't even appreciate it, but it's a clear purpose anyway, and it's the Lord Christ I'm serving. And I think purpose is what gives you longevity, because if it's just for the paycheck, there's never enough. There's always another task. There's always the difficulty in a world that is broken by sin. And yet, if we feel like what we're doing is a call from God, it changes. And if we can see the way in which it helps. So I always encourage people to try and connect the task they do with some bigger meaning. And at Boeing, even the people in administration, people in finance, when they came into my organization, we would take them out to see the airplanes. And we would say, this is what we're about. Yes, this is part of the task to get there, but this is what we're about. And kind of keep the end in mind. So I have found I found that to be true. I left Boeing to teach at SPU for a few years and Seattle Pacific University. And
yep.
I did finally announce my retirement, but I stayed. It'll be 16 and a half years when I leave in June. And, you know, there have been some really painful times, of course, difficulties. Mm-hmm. But there's a bigger purpose. And I think that that really, really does change it. Even in the middle of my time at Boeing during the difficult period that I described in the preface, and I had a job with an offer with to be CEO of a software company in Illinois.
Yep.
And I looked at it, and we prayed about it, and ultimately decided to stay. And I really couldn't tell you exactly why, but I've become convinced in retrospect that my life would be very different if I'd taken that, but that God would have honored that as well, because I put it in front of Him. And He didn't want us to be paralyzed. He wants us to act. But I think if we go before Him, He'll bless what we do. And so I have confidence that it would have been really interesting doing that, and it was great doing what I did.
Yeah, well, I would say definitely, and having read that chapter, I know there was that interaction with your boss where you sort of explained this story of Joseph to him, and he ended up, you know, he started calling you preacher.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a great, you know, it was a very spiritual story intersected into such a secular job, but it seemed like that was sort of a big turning point,
right.
At least, you know, for you in terms of interjecting your faith.
I mean, it wasn't perfect after that. I had a boss. We went through a downturn at Boeing in 93, I think it was about 3 years after that. And we had to do some layoffs. It was very painful. And from my point of view, I didn't really see that the need was there. And I did understand the finances of the company. And it seemed like we were doing it to create bigger bonuses for some of our bosses. And yet we had to do it. And so I set up an employment place where we could bring notices of jobs. We worked with every person to help them find their job. I had personal conversations with everyone that we laid off. And my boss was very critical of that. He said, "You got to be more cutthroat on this. You just do it." And he said, "I'm not going to talk to any of these people." And then it turns out that we lost a few other people. And he said, "That's because you were this way." And I said, "No. There were some people that came to a point in their career, and what they decided is they didn't want to work in the rest of Boeing. They were fine working here, but they wanted a new opportunity. And when they got one guy went to Microsoft, and I congratulated him, and I'm still a friend of his." So, you know, I think creating that culture produces a place where people love to work. But people don't always understand. And it isn't always easy. And I, as a fallible person, still make mistakes. And so I'm sure I made many of them. And they contribute to the pain in work. So it won't be perfect. But you have a purpose.
Yeah.
And direction.
No, absolutely. I love that. So I know, you know, I've taken up some of your time here. So just kind of finishing up here. You know, just, you know, obviously I want to tell everyone how they can learn more about what you're doing and stuff. But, you know, basically we're meeting as a Daniel dinners. That's what we call these groups. And we just eat vegetables as a way to say, all right, we're not eating from the world. We're eating from Daniel. So that's the concept for these Daniel dinners. So it's a good time. You know, we only drink water. We only eat vegetables. That's kind of what we're doing. So, but I guess what would you advise, you know, to, you know, men and women, you know, that are, you know, kind of moving into that next step of their careers or their families. And, you know, what would be kind of like some words for, as we're meeting in community together to discussing this, what kind of things would you, you know, advise and move forward with?
Well, it sounds to me like you're doing a lot of the really great things. I really applaud what you're doing. I think having a discussion that maybe goes a level deeper and ask the question, if I'm a finance guy, in what way is the work itself of value to God? Yeah, I see my work is important to God, but is that work? If you're selling digital marketing, if you're selling digital ads, in what way might that bring be of value to God? We're in an imperfect world. It isn't always that every part of everything we do is of value. But how do you start exploring that question? You're an engineer. You're a teacher. You're a janitor. In what way is the work itself of value? And I think that's, in some ways, a question that's hard. But I think there are clues in the scripture. And what we've started to do is have some people that are meeting in affinity groups that kind of explore, okay, here's a group of Christian lawyers. What does that mean? Well, you can start off by saying you're honest. And then you can say, well, I will not take on a case of gay marriage. And I mean, that focuses all on the negative kind of stuff. But what is the value of law and justice? And does God care about that? And am I his agent? And when I come to this difficult situation, I'm not in charge. So how do I influence this? And it won't be perfect, but it'll be a step. And what can I do? And whatever position. So I would encourage you to kind of think about that. I would encourage you to pray for each other. I think it'd be fun if we had the opportunity to meet your group. I love to meet groups of people like this. I'll be out that Labor Day weekend when probably a lot of people will be gone. But
I would love that.
It would be fun to get together and continue the conversation. But I you can't imagine how thrilled I was to get your note, because every time I see one of these, I say, God's at work there. He's at work there. He's at work there. And it's exciting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your work definitely lives on, and I think it's inspiring, you know, just interviews and the content that you created. So I think that's, we're definitely grateful for that. At least I am, for sure. So,
and just a heads up on, I think it's the 18th of October, or the 13th of October in 2018, there's going to be a Faith at Work Summit conference in Chicago, and I'm on the organizing team for that, and it'll bring people from all over the country and from around the world, but people that, and the goal will be to talk with pastors and educators and prayer church ministry, but also with real people doing real work and having some stories. I'm hoping to get Don Flo there. I've been working with him on that, and it'd be great because he's just a really interesting guy. So anyway, that will be coming up. And
that's great. The next one, that one is in Dallas this year, right?
Well, it was in Dallas. We had it in Dallas in the fall of 2016. So it was last October.
Okay. And what are some ways that people can see what you're doing now with Theology of Work? You know, how can people keep up with what you're doing?
Well, the Theology of Work project is certainly, I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the website. If you've looked at it, you realize that, you know, there's video and other kinds of things out there. There are a number of places where there are leaders who are providing daily blogs. That's not something I do, but others do. And I read these, and I could point you to some of those kinds of resources. Mark Roberts does one from the Max DePree Institute at Fuller in Southern California. So there's that kind of thing. The work I'm trying to do right now is too embryonic to really share, but I was trained as a mathematician, and I'm trying to say, how does mathematics affect the way I see the world? And I'm trying to write it from a secular point of view, so it's not a lot of Christian language. But I have a Christian version of that, that in trying to probe pretty deeply into mathematics. Mm. And just as a kind of a way of thinking so that others can do that in their own fields and raise those questions. I'd love to see a book on advertising and thinking about, it's pretty easy to find negatives, but it's...
there's not.
Yeah, so when John writes, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And I look at a lot of advertising and it's kind of focused on those three things.
Yeah.
And so I ask the question, how can you nudge this in a different way? Even when you're not in charge, suggest other things that bring dignity and value to people. And good results as well. And the best I've read on that book is actually written by a Jewish guy.
Interesting. What book is that?
It's called, he changed the title. I'll come up with it. I'm sorry.
No worries.
I've made it a point of reading about a book a week for a long, long time.
Okay.
And I've got a lot of titles in my head, and sometimes my hard drive spins more slowly than it used to, and I can't pull them up. But
I love it. Well, I'll email you, and if you remember, then we'll follow up.
I'll dig it out. So anyway, that's kind of one thing. Keep praying for each other. Keep encouraging each other. Mm. There are a number of people I know of in the Chicago area that are doing really interesting things. And at some point, inviting someone to just meet your group, I don't know if you want to do that. But
yeah, Bill, no, I would love to get more guests. Yeah, if you have ideas, definitely. Oh,
Bill Pollard is one who's really interesting. And Gary Ginter is another one. Gary Ginter invented the... commodities exchange market and the commodities futures market in about 1980 or so.
Wow.
In Chicago, he made a lot of money, gave all of it away. Now he's trying to invent a new kind of engine propulsion system. And he's just a really thoughtful believer. Lives in Chicago, just east of Oak Park, I think, and a number of others that I know around the city. So.
Oh wow! Yeah, no, I would definitely be interested. So yeah, maybe I'll email you. Could follow up on that. Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm sure that if I connected you with Bill Pollard, that there would be a time when he could do that. He lives in he's retired now, so he lives in the winter in Florida, but he's back in Wheaton right now. And there are others too. Mark Washington is in charge of the MBA program for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship among all the campuses mm-hmm. in the graduate program. So he thinks a lot about this. He puts on a conference, Believers in Business.
InterVarsity, they're doing a lot of, Campus Crusade, I'm thinking. They're doing a lot of things with the theology of work in Chicago specifically, which is kind of interesting. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Al, I really appreciate your time. When you wrote back, I was so excited. Like, oh, I'm so excited to, meet you, especially for all the work you've done. So, really appreciate you jumping on and, taking the time with me today. I appreciate it. And would love to stay in touch,
I would too.
As we could.
And I'll let you know as the details of my trip come a little closer. And if nothing else, maybe we could meet for coffee when I'm out.
Oh, I would love that. I'm right by both airports, so wherever you want to go.
We're actually going to be in Oak Park, probably staying in Oak Park is my expectation. And since I heard about your church, we usually go to church and we go to a.
You have to come to Calvary. Oh, I would love to introduce you to my pastor. He's just a fantastic guy. So supportive of this and.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
So, yeah, we love to introduce you. And by that time, hopefully some other people have heard the interview as well. So we'll be able to introduce. And you said that's Labor Day, right?
Labor Day weekend. So I think we'll come out probably before then. Bill Pollard asked me to do something with him probably earlier that week.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how much time, but
sure.
We'll be there over Sunday. And then we have a concert that we're going to on Sunday, I think, for my wife's cousin. And then we're flying home probably Monday. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I will follow up with an email here. And yeah, really appreciate your time, Alan. Look forward to talking to you in Labor Day, hopefully.
Hey, guys. Quick reminder again to join the Facebook group. Search Daniel Dinners on Facebook to request to join the private group. If we contribute to the discussion, the more we help not only ourselves, but others as well.